This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy St. Patty's Day, everyone. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 17th, episode 1126. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this St. Patty's Day. I should have had O'Danny Boy playing as our opener today. Didn't even think about it. That would have been a better option.
That is a good point. I need to know, are you wearing green this morning?
I am. I am wearing bright fluorescent green, one of my bicycle shirts. So I am in green today. I am playing the role.
My boys were very excited last night. They had to run around the house and find what they're going to wear today to go to school. What are we going to wear? What are we going to wear? So they're going to be so green that it's a little bit obnoxious, but it's all right. It's good. It'll be fun.
Yes, it's always fun when you get to be obnoxious at school. That's the best time. And I can't drink green beer anymore because my diet, I'm not allowed to have alcohol. So I can't do the green beer anymore. I have to find something else green to drink.
Yes, and Miss Julep.
Yes. They're very minty, that's for sure. Well, we are not here to talk about alcohol today. We're actually here, or even leprechauns. We're here to talk about training. Christy is with us the third Tuesday of every month, and she is with the Certified Horsemanship Association and always gets some great guests to come on, talk about different training topics. And you have some really cool stuff planned for today, and Jennifer's going to tell us about them now.
On today's Certified Horsemanship Association Tuesday edition, we will warm up with some agility work. Horse agility, that is, with a little help from Heidi Potter, certified trainer and instructor in horse agility, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And then after the break, we will learn about how Tai Chi and horseback riding go together with James Shaw. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Well, you've had a busy month since we've talked last, haven't you?
Yes, you know, I've worked 4 weekends in a row. I keep saying, okay, now when am I going to have a day off? Because then Monday through Friday, I have a tendency to get on that computer and work too. So anyways, it's coming. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it is not a train, and I'm excited. But it has been very busy the last few weekends. The Quarter Horse Convention was great in Fort Worth. Thank you to all the staff that put that on. That's quite the undertaking. I think they had 1,200 attendees there.
Wow.
So that was large. Yeah.
Then now, that's the Quarter Horse, the AQHA?
It is.
Conference. What do they do? What kind of, is it run? Is it all classroom stuff? Do they do a lot of arena stuff? How do they arrange their conference?
Their conference is primarily business meetings. So there's many of the attendees that are on different committees, like marketing or public policy or whatever the case may be. And we get together and we have meetings until we're done with the stuff that's on our agenda. And then we have some free time, which is kind of nice, too, to be able to see the area. They produced a really lovely event on one of the evenings at Cowtown. So we were all over at the Will Rogers Memorial Complex, and they did a reining competition, and they did a cutting competition and a working ranch horse competition. an arranged cow competition for us. So that was really fun to be able to see all of those fabulous quarter horses come and do that. And it was your top people, like Sean Flaherty, Tim McQuay for reining. I mean, your top people that came and participated.
Now, is the AQHA is the largest horse association in the world. Am I right about that?
They are currently the largest breed association in the world by quite a bit, too. But, you know, it's good that way because even though they have the American Quarter Horse Association at the front of it, boy, there was people from all over. We sat at Cowtown behind a gentleman from France, a gentleman from Switzerland, and a gentleman from Austria that all know each other through the European circuit, and they actually came over together for the event. So there was many people there from all over the world. It was great.
Wow. Okay, very cool. And then you did a couple of others, too. Tell us about those.
Yes. We had actually an equine facility manager clinic here in Colorado that I got to take off my admin hat and put on my actual let's go and get it done hat, and we certified 10 barn managers, and they ranged from Oregon, Washington, Montana, and here in Colorado. So they came from all over to do that program, and that's a fun program. The only thing, though, Jen and Glenn, who live in Florida, one day we woke up, and my car said -1.
Oh!
Ow!
Oops.
Yeah, and it was in an indoor arena, which is even colder sometimes than an outdoor when it's nice.
They are colder, actually.
Oh. So we're sitting there, and we're just bitter, and I have a really funny story. So my other clinician was Teresa Cackard, who we've had on the show before from All American Horses, and she is all bundled up because she's from Southern California, right? I mean, she looks like Frosty the Snowman. She has so many layers of clothes on, it's just funny. So we're sitting at the bleachers, and we're both sitting there, and we're watching, I think it was vitals. So we're watching someone take a horse's temperature and find their digital pulse and do all those kinds of things and talk to us about all of that. And all of a sudden, there's this horrible noise, and the horse does nothing. All the Coloradans and people from Montana do nothing. The Oregon person, the Washington person, and my California clinician jumped and went, "What was that?" And it was snow sliding off the roof of the indoor arena. So
which
funny.
They had never heard before.
In their lives, ever. And Teresa goes, "Horses have to get used to that?" I mean, she was shocked.
Well, you know, and how many of us that did live in snow country or still do have been under it when it comes off? That's happened a few times.
No thank you. No thank you.
That actually happened to Jennifer bringing the horse out of our back. We had a big barn there in Pennsylvania, and she was walking the horse out the back door, and the snow came off and hit her and the horse. So that's always fun.
Chilly. Wake up call.
Yeah.
If we didn't, the horse wouldn't go out that door of the barn for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time.
I bet.
No way. Something
crazy when I went out there. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it again. They are smart
that
way.
My friends worry about this. Mm-hmm.
Very smart that way. So, and then this weekend is the American Hippotherapy Association, and they work with occupational therapists and physical therapists, and a lot of them, of course, now are using horses in equine-assisted activities and therapies. So I am going to go over there, and I'm actually going to give riding lessons to the OTs and the PTs, which will be kind of fun, I think. And then we're going to do a roundtable talk about the industry and a risk management talk and a panel and all kinds of things. So Jacqueline Tilley runs that association, and she has been to ours and has spoken at our conference, so it's a pleasure to be able to return that favor. So I will be back in Fort Worth this weekend doing that, so I'm looking forward to that one as well.
Very good. Now, you had AHA on the list here. What's that?
Yeah, that's actually American Hippotherapy because I'm going there this weekend. However, I have some news. Do you want to hear the news?
Sure.
Breaking story.
It is a breaking story right here on Horses in the Morning. Yes, it is. So we are Education Alliance partners, of course, with AQHA. And now, drum roll, please. We are now also Education Alliance partners with the Arabian Horse Association.
Oh, wow, cool.
Cool.
And I'm thrilled about that because I learned to ride on Arabian myself, And I currently own quarter horses primarily, but I did learn how to ride on Arabians and loved the experience. And so I'm thrilled to be able to have them now as an Education Alliance partner too. And a lot of our members use Arabians as well as quarter stock, and we have just such a variety of all breed, all discipline that this is exciting.
Well, that's also another very large association. It's larger than people think, the Arabian Association. Of course, we have Karen Chatton on once a month to talk about endurance riding, and they all ride Arabians.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, that breed dominates in that sport. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the few disciplines where Arabians really do dominate.
Yes.
Or get away from the breed stuff, yeah.
They sure do.
Well, congratulations there. I know that's a big deal for the CHA, is acquiring those partnerships.
I have a question.
Yes.
So I am an Arabian enthusiast, and I am a member of the Arabian Horse Association. What does this partnership mean for me?
Very good question, Jen. Well, a couple things. It'd be the same as if you're a AQHA member, because we aligned it pretty similarly. First of all, it gives you an opportunity to have access to our education. So you can come to all of our regional conferences and our international conference at the CHA member price, even if you're not a CHA member, but you're a member of one of our Education Alliance partners. So the education is exciting. It also allows for the professional horsemen of the Arabian Horse Association now can, of course, they could always get certified with us, but now it's going to give us more access to them learning about who we are and why that might help their business and things that they might want to look into as far as that goes. And we can now kind of help each other with each other's databases, kind of getting the word out about horses in general. So we're obviously a first touch organization, so we teach the beginner. And then after we teach the beginner, we'd love to feed them to the show professional who maybe wants, if the client wants to show. So now we will be able to feed them, of course, to a lot more Arabian horse trainers if we know who they are, because it gets our two memberships to know each other. So that's what we're very excited about.
Well, that's kind of cool. So that you're taking previously separate areas of the horse community and bringing them closer together. And that's really great, because that's something that in the United States, that's something unique to our culture, being a very, very large country geographically, how segmented the horse enthusiasts are. So that's really great, because it's helping to reduce that and make things a little bit more cohesive, if nothing else, just so that we can communicate with each other and learn more from each other. It's really cool.
Absolutely. I am trying, and it's a personal mission, but I know many others in the horse journey are on this personal mission too. You know, it's all about networking and not reinventing the wheel, and it's all about less fragmentation and more coming together and joining. Absolutely.
So if I'm a board member in any large horse-oriented organization, how would I contact Certified Horsemanship Association?
You can't say it.
And investigate how we could become an education alliance partner.
I think one of the best things to do is when you contact our office, whether you talk to me or one of our other wonderful staff people, is find out about our international conference, because last year it was really great. I think we had chatted a little bit on the show about NRHA, National Reining Horse Association, brought in some wonderful reining horses, and some local trainers in the area brought them, and all of our participants, our instructors, got to get on and ride a reiner. This year we're going to do the same thing with the National Cutting Horse Association. They're going to bring in some cutting horses down to Amarillo along with a flag and give us all an opportunity to ride a professional cutting horse with a professional cutting trainer. And I think those kinds of opportunities, you know, once those breeds or disciplines come and kind of meet our folks that are teaching in the trenches, I mean, we literally are. We're out there trying to get the masses more involved in horses. That's our goal. Then that partnership kind of naturally happens, because they see, aha, this is a good way for us to work together. It's not competition with what we're currently doing. It's actually going to expand what we're currently doing. And, you know, there's nothing like a handshake and a look in the eye and meeting people. And I know we do so many things now over the phone and over the internet, coming together face to face. So that would be my first suggestion to folks.
Cool.
Very good. And then you have also a conference in Amarillo coming up. Is that?
Yes, that is the one. It's going to be October 22nd through 25th, and it's open to the public. We would love for anybody to come. And again, ride a reiner, ride a cutter, whatever we happen to be doing that particular time. We're going to have Julie Goodnight, our dear friend and spokesperson, back, and wonderful other clinicians and trainers. And our conference is very hands-on. People that come for the full conference get to actually ride horses in sessions that are provided by this year, West Texas A&M University in Canyon. So we're thrilled to be able to have that wonderful university helping us in that way. So come one, come all. There's registration information on the website, and we can, of course, answer all your questions. And as we get more speakers, we will put them up there for you to see who they are.
And when is that again?
I'm sorry, Glenn.
It's October 22nd through 25th.
Okay. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I think the whole having this conference and actual opportunities to sit on horses and have learning sessions on a horse, that's pretty unique to the CHA, I think. You don't hear about that too often.
No, and I'll tell you, it is one of the most fun parts about my job and one of the most hideous. And the reason for that is because I have got to be really secure in my gut that the horses and tack and arena and location where we're going is going to be suitable and is going to be safe and is going to give a good experience to our members and to what we stand for with our standards. So I love the colleges and universities that we partner with, because a lot of those horses are used to adults being on them, right, the college-age folks. They're going to be impeccably turned out because many of them show an intercollegiate or NCAA or whatever they're doing. And it's just an absolute pleasure to be able to go to those universities
and
colleges.
They're used to a ton of different riders riding them, too. That's the other thing.
Yes, they are.
You know, that's nice. They're not bonded with one person, which makes a big difference, too.
Huge.
Yeah. Well, very cool. That's great. Hey, I have a list for you that Jennifer found. Do you want it? You want to do the list? It's 25 things. We don't do all 25, but it's things riding instructors understand. So
ooh,
it's relevant,
like it.
Too. I actually have a relevant list, which is very
That's
unusual.
That's because I found it for you. Yeah.
That's because you found it for me.
Thanks, Jen.
And the first thing on the list, is it ties into what you were just talking about with those horses and ponies, is how to recognize that subtle head tilt and eye glint that warns you that the school pony is about to change from an angel to a party animal. Doesn't every instructor know when they come around that turn and then they look at you and you go, oh, no, that it's that time.
Yes.
There's a crow hop coming. Something's going to happen.
Time.
The switch has flipped and the pony is done.
And I swear to you, they know the hour. They know. At about 55 minutes, they're like, you know, I pretty much know my hour is almost done, and there's the gate, and there's the center of the arena. I'm just going to come stand by you as the instructor because, you know, I only work an hour. I'm a union employee. I'm an hour kind of horse. That's all I do. It cracks me up.
That is
That's
very
cool
funny because the next one is they have an inbuilt timer set to 60 minutes. That's the
exact
next one. Very good, Chris.
Thanks.
These are things that riding instructors understand. Knowing not to try to leg someone up that's unbalanced unless you want them to end up sitting on your shoulder like a parrot. Or over the other side. Either one. We've seen both.
Yes.
I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that, Christine? Given a leg up to a student and tossed them over the other side? Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. Here goes the embarrassing stories again. No, but I have a story. So my father, I had Popcorn the Wonder POA, and my father decided he was going to give me a leg up onto my pony, and he gave me too much of a leg up, and he gave me a leg up and over on the other side, and I landed on my booty, and I stood up, and I went, Popcorn, why did you move? And my dad goes, he was rock solid. I just boosted you too hard. Oh, okay. So years ago.
And we've all seen that happen. It's just like,
so funny.
Right over the top. That most of your students don't know left from right. That's very hard when somebody says that you're not ready. You got to think about it.
Now, in here in the United States, Christy, Do most folks still use left and right versus the European habit of using inside and outside?
No, we all use inside outside too, Jen, because absolutely, it gets so confusing. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's really hard to drop your reins and hold your hands up and see which one makes the L when you're riding a horse, right? Very hard to do that skill.
Does anybody ever use near and far anymore?
You know, sometimes we'll use that in relation to the sides of the horse. So we'll say you're going to get on the near side, or don't forget to check the offside of your horse's tack before you get on, or we're going to actually mount from the offside today or dismount from the offside. But once they're actually on the rail going, no, I don't think very many people use near and far. Yeah. At that point, it becomes inside, outside. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, kind of interesting how those different terms all mean the same thing. Isn't that just like horse people to have three different sets of words that mean the exact same thing?
Same thing. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I'll step off my soapbox now.
This next one, even us horse husbands understand, is just how painful it is to drop a heavy, wet, wooden pole, jump pole on your foot. We've all done that.
Yeah. Once again, then, can I tell a story? I'm sorry about this story, but another story.
No,
so I'm at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo. Okay, thank you. I'm at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo this past weekend here in Denver, and we're doing our regional conference in conjunction with it, and we've got a bunch of speakers, and we're also speaking. And at one point, though, I'm also on the Colorado Horse Council board, so I had to volunteer. So I was manning this arena, and the gentleman that was coming in next was going to do his talk, and I said to him, what would you like? He goes, I really need those poles removed from the arena. There was four poles set up like his ground poles. I said, sure, no problem. So I go out there, and they're pretty heavy. And he's over there working with his horse, and there's people milling about in the stands. And I lift the first one. It's really heavy, but I get over to the side. I'm like, all right, here we go. Get my CrossFit going on, you know, bend correctly, get my legs engaged, do the second pole. And by the time I'm on the third pole, these poles are huge. There are these two cowboys sitting on the fence, literally staring at me. I'm like, where is chivalry? Gentlemen, jump into this arena and help me. And so they did. Okay, ma'am. Thank you. My goodness.
At least you asked for help.
Cracking me up. I did. I was like, oh, and maybe they thought, well, I don't want to offend her. You know, women don't like to think, oh, like, well,
yeah,
I don't
need
any help. But I'm like, I love help. Give me help, please. Fabulous. Thank you for the help. So funny.
Next one. The value of SPF, quality skincare products and wearing sunglasses. Yeah, we all know that one. In Europe, they call it handbag face. You have to think about that for a minute, but they do call it handbag face. We call it leather face or leather skin. You know, they look leathery. They call it handbag face. So that was funny.
Yeah, I'm getting a little offended. I don't know. The older I get, I don't know about that.
That particular shade of jealous. Oh, I got to tell you, the Asian girls now, the young girls, are really, really into white skin. That is a thing over there. They want to be as pale and white as possible. So when we were at Epcot over the weekend at Disney with Jennifer's parents, and there were a lot of Asian girls there, young teenage girls there, and they all had umbrellas. They all were completely like covered up. You know, they just they really want to be as white as possible. That's a big thing over there. Exact opposite of
Did not know that.
Exact opposite of here. How about that particular shade of jealousy reserved in winter for the other riding instructors who have an indoor arena, and you're outside in the snow, shoveling your arena, shoveling a path around it so you have someplace to ride this year especially. These are things that instructors understand. How about how to walk distances and pony strides, horse strides, and competition strides? Three different strides.
Yeah.
And you know those lengths, don't you?
We are very good at that. Well, you have to. When those poles are on the ground and you're doing your gymnastics or whatever you're doing, absolutely. And not everything, you know, well, the horse has 12, you know, 12 feet in a stride. I'm like, yeah, not on that pony. There's not. That's not happening.
Not on that pony.
The next one we do in Florida almost all year round, and that's plastering yourself in jungle strength insect repellent in the hot weather to try and avoid the bugs. We have to do that. Now, you know, over the winter, it's not so bad. We get flies. We still have flies. They never die here. This time of year, now the next month, we'll have to start put fly spray on just to walk out to the barn to take care of the barn. I mean, you can't go anywhere without your fly spray and insect repellent because it's just so bad. And I know other areas of the country have that same thing. So we keep one everywhere, front door, back door, in the barn, in the car. There's fly spray everywhere. We have bottles of it. Let's see here. Chanting up, down in your sleep after teaching beginners. And heels down. You probably have nightmares about that, too. So, yeah, those dreams about that up, down, heels down thing. I have heard more instructors complain about that.
When I was out in Southern California where I lived, I got vanity plates because, you know, you're only cool in Southern California if you have vanity plates. So I got vanity plates, and mine said H-E-E-L-S-D-N.
Oh, did it?
Heels down. Yes, it did. Because I said if I had a dime for every time I've said that to people, then I would probably be a rich woman. Though, you know, now there's a new trend, Jen. You're talking about trends here. There's a new trend in riding instruction. We don't say heels down anymore. We now say toes up. And the reason for that is that people were jamming and slamming their heels down and bracing so that they would actually bounce, right? Whereas it seems like for whatever reason, when you say toes up, they flex their ankle more and they have more of that, you know, shock absorption in their joint down there. So we've changed it a little bit. It's kind of interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Well, here, that ties in with that. It's never finishing a lesson with the phrase, let's end on a positive note. Do that one last time. Let's have one final jump. So what happens? You haven't read this. What happens when you phrase it that way?
Yeah.
You're going to be doing it six more times. So I get it
yes,
right.
You are. Over and over. You have to end on that positive note. So, yeah, no, right. You definitely, when it's good and you still have 10 minutes left, you end. Because next time you might be going over 10 or 15. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
That's right. So there's a bunch more, but the last one, and I think this is a good one after this winter, is why it's always worth spending money on good socks. That is the last one, and I think after this winter, that's more than relevant. That's for certain. Well, we do have your first guest ready.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well, let me introduce to you Heidi Potter. So Heidi and I have known each other through the Certified Horsemanship Association because she is actually a master instructor with us, excuse me, as well as a clinician. But she does many more things. She's also a centered riding clinician, and she has done many centered riding clinics all around the country. She also now, in 2012, just became an accredited trainer with the International Horse Agility Club, of which she is going to talk about today. So Heidi, welcome to our show. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thank you for inviting me.
I would love for you to talk a little bit more before we get started on our questions here about your location there in southern Vermont and about all that you do.
Okay. We've had a long winter in southern Vermont. We've broken several records. One is due to temperature. Another one is snowfall. but my place is called New England Center for Horsemanship, and we're located in the tri-state area right down in the southeast corner of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts. And what we do here is I hold a lot of obstacle training workshops, some horse agility clinics. We also do a versatility challenge where we kind of incorporate three fun classes for people to come in and try obstacles in hand and obstacles out on the property. We have a brook and a pond and a whole playground full of things for people to come and practice on, and we make it into kind of a fun competition. And then their third class is to ride a horsemanship pattern out in a big field. And we actually put signs up so nobody has to memorize anything. So there's a sign that tells them where to walk, where to trot, where to lope or canter. So that's some of the things that we do here. We've downsized our facility in here now due to my travel schedule that keeps everything in balance. So,
Heidi, did your centered riding instructor, did you ever meet Sally Swift?
Oh, yeah. Sally lived about 10 minutes from me. So
oh, really?
Very, very blessed to have had years with her, riding with her and working with her, but also just, you know, friendship with her. When Sally was actually still in her, I would say, early 90s, we would drive to her house and pick her up and bring her to an indoor arena, and we'd help her to a chair, we'd wrap her in blankets and go get our horses and take a lesson from her. And she loved it. And then we would take her to lunch, of course, and just kind of have a nice afternoon. But she was amazing. And
she really did work up until she died. I mean, she was, how old was she when she died? She was 95, somewhere in there?
Shy of her 96th birthday.
Yeah.
And, you know, her book, Centered Riding 1, was published when Sally was 88. And Centered Riding 2 was published when she was 92 years old. So she's certainly an inspiration.
You know, and that just goes to show that, you know, you're never done, right? I mean, she was 88, and that became a bestseller in the horse world and still is.
Absolutely.
You know, that, and that was published in 1985, and they're still selling original copies of that all over the place.
Oh, absolutely. And last I knew, it was translated into 14 different languages, and it may even be more now.
I don't want to hijack this. I know we're talking about horse agility, but for people, you know, there's a lot of the current generation that may have never heard of Sally Swift, and Jennifer was always a centered riding person and actually took lessons from a centered riding instructor, so it always fascinated me. Tell us a little bit about Sally as a person.
Yeah, she was amazing. She was a big person in a little body. She had beautiful, she was in her 80s when I met her. Beautiful white hair and big blue eyes and a really booming voice. She, you know, when we took lessons from her, I can remember one of my first clinics with her, and she could look, and again, she was in her probably mid-80s then, and she could look all the way across the arena and say, Heidi, you're not breathing. You know, if she had given us an exercise and I was focusing on what I was doing and getting in my head instead of in my body, she could pick it out. She could pick out if you, whatever joint in your body was tense or tight or positional things. She was just so sharp and just such a pleasure. She was also very, very humble. She lived in a very small little house on a side street in Brattleboro, which is the next town over from where I live in Guilford. And just very humble, very kind. She spoke
well, she
her
was
mind.
Actually known, she was actually known as being a bit of a spinster, wasn't she?
Well, she was never married.
Pennies is what I meant by that. You know, she definitely watched the pennies. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very humble. She didn't, material possessions weren't important to her. She cherished friendships. She certainly cherished all the instructors that worked with her, the senior instructors that traveled with her, and all of us that were involved in centered riding to kind of carry on her legacy. Sally's really thought was she didn't even care if it was called centered riding. She just hoped it would become the way riding was.
I'll tell you what was so neat. I got to meet her at the American Horse Publications event when they gave her the Horse Person of the Year, that they have a Visionary Award. And it was wonderful. It was my first time ever meeting her, and I got to go up to her and say, Miss Sally, I have been using your manuals to teach from for a really long time. And you could tell that even though she didn't really know who I was at all, she was just so happy about that. And so I'm with you. She's a pretty neat person, and how lucky you are to be able to have lived so close to her, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm very thankful.
That's why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I've never really met anybody that had that kind of interaction with her and never really had an opportunity to, you know, do an interview with her before she died. She, you know, one of the reasons she developed the centered riding system was she had scoliosis, and she always had a problem with that when she was a kid, and it kind of developed out of that. But she, a lot of people don't know, she worked for the American Holstein Association for many, many years until she retired. So she worked on the cow side of things for a long time.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's kind of funny because she, through her life, as she worked with different practitioners to help her find balance within her own body, Miss Mabel Todd was one of them. She's the author of a book called The Thinking Body. And she really helped Sally find ways to find balance in her body using imagery. And that's where a lot of her imagery comes from through centered riding. It's when you can't physically make something in your body change, that you can do it with your intention and your energy and your vision of the way it should be. And she also worked with a gentleman named Peter Payne, who worked with her with the Alexander technique and also in Tai Chi. So centered riding has a heavy background also in the Eastern philosophies and the martial arts, the ground in the martial arts. And when I took my first centered riding lesson and the instructor started talking about soft eyes and centering and grounding and breathing, I was just like, oh my God, I found the place I want to go, you know, with my teaching. So she took all these things with her, and they worked as she wrote as a young woman, and she taught when she was in her early 20s. But she didn't dare to share them because she was so young. She figured people aren't going to want to hear about breathing and centering and drop your ball in the mud and all that. But when she retired from Holstein is when she started to go on the road and really share these philosophies and techniques. And, you know, in her mid-60s, she didn't care what people thought. She had the confidence to share it. She knew it worked. And she had many people that she had been working with telling her, you need to share this. You need to get this out there.
Well, you know, and back in her days when she was in her 20s, I mean, she was born in the teens, if I remember, 1912, 15, something like that. It was in the teens, you know, back in that, women were not respected in the horse world. It was a military guy's world at that point.
Yeah, so certainly at 20, 21, 22 years old, you weren't going to tell people these things.
Right. Especially men in those days.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to hijack that whole thing, but very interesting.
Yeah. And it's not a hijack at all. I use the centered riding principles in everything I do, including horse agility. So it kind of segues very nicely.
Well, good. Good.
So, Heidi, I know that we do kind of in this country a lot of dog agility, and a lot of people have heard of dog agility. But how did you hear about horse agility?
Well, I actually read an article a few years ago in a horse magazine, and they were interviewing Vanessa B., who is the founder of Horse Agility. She's in Devon, England. And I read this article, and there was a few things that really jumped out at me that you don't read about too often, or not often enough, let's say. And one was she was developing a club, or she had developed a club and was creating now this horse agility sport. You were not allowed to use a flag, a rope, a whip, a stick, nothing other than your halter in your hand. I liked that aspect right away. Another thing I really was amazed at is when she was judging competitions for horse agility, 50% of your score went on horsemanship. And then 50% of it on the execution of the obstacle. And that horsemanship piece is, the horse-handler relationship. Is the horse relaxed? Is he calm? Is the handler reading him correctly and supporting him? It's not a timed event. So there's not that pressure. Horses are allowed to play with the obstacles. We're always, as judges, looking for the interaction. And I don't know of any other equine sport on that, on the horsemanship piece. You know, an example would be in horse agility, we're always working towards liberty work. So you're going to take the halter off. So whenever you pull on the lead rope to get your horse to come, or if he goes past you and you have to pull to stop him, you lose a point off your horsemanship score. So they're just saying you as a horseman need to do a little more work there. And so that was one other piece that I just thought, wow, that's really, really impressive. The rules that she talked about, there were only two. One was it had to be safe, and the second one was it had to be fun for you and for your horse.
Gosh, so that sounds like CHA, Heidi, Certified Horsemanship Association. Safe, effective, and fun. That's all your riding lesson needs to be. It doesn't have to be any certain way of doing anything. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So where did the International Horse Agility Club first originate?
It originated in Devon, England. Vanessa was a riding instructor, trainer. She was then, and she still is. And she was, I think she said it was December of 09. She was working with a young girl, and the young girl's horse was really, really frightened, and they were doing groundwork. So she decided to put a few obstacles out in the arena and think up some ways to help them negotiate it, to see if that could bring them together. And it worked really, really well, and she was, you know, comparing it to dog agility. And she thought, well, certainly people must do this with horses. And she went home and Googled it and found nothing and was just amazed. So she developed a little local club in England, got some people together, put some obstacles out there, and they started doing groundwork. And she used these really, really good, I will call them natural horsemanship techniques, but with a flavor of really gentle, calm work, really understanding the horse and reading the horse and supporting the horse, not really focused on the competitive aspect. And also bringing to it a little different flavor, because in natural horsemanship, you see a lot of work with pressure. You know, I'm not saying it's bad or wrong, but it is the way it is. So a lot of, you know, you're going to pull until the horse gives and you're going to soften. And, you know, with horse agility, we're working more with energy. And that's one of the things that I really like. We do a lot of that with centered riding. It just plays really nicely into the way I work with horses. So body language is a big piece of it. So she took all these kind of really nice qualities and developed a club and developed a sport. And it just turned 5 years old this last December. And we now have, I think it was over, just a little over 1,000 members worldwide that have joined this club. And it has grown, you know, in terms of how she's developed the club and the levels and the rules. And it's grown all along the way into something that's really, really wonderful.
So, Heidi, tell everyone then, I know it's ground only, so it's not mounted. Is that correct? And then what are some of the obstacles that people might encounter when they compete?
Yes, it is ground only, although I'll say they do a summer challenge, which is really fun. And in that summer challenge, if you choose to, you can do your obstacles in hand, and then you can get on and do them bareback, either with a halter and lead or with a neck rope, or at liberty if you're at that level. So there's a little bit of play going on in that area. But typically, yes, horse agility is all done on the ground. It's really just good horsemanship. We're teaching basic skills. So the obstacles you'd start off with in just level one would be tarps, poles, hula hoops, a low jump, and I mean low, like 6 inches, you know, or less. The height of the jump isn't even important. We do a lot with basic ground skills in the beginning, weaving cones. We want to really teach that horse just to stay at our shoulder and follow our body. And typically we're looking for an arm's length of lead rope between the buckle of the halter and your hand. So you're really showing that horse is coming with you, and you're giving him room. So a common obstacle, and actually Vanessa said one of the hardest ones, which is surprising, is to have a horse stand their two front feet in a hula hoop and you park them there. And then you back up, maybe you stand in another hula hoop, you back up the length of your rope if your horse can handle that. We use 12 to 15 foot rope. And in beginner level, it's maybe a 5 second hold. And then as you go up in levels, it would be a longer hold. And a lot of horses have trouble with that. And, you know, it's teaching patience. It's the beginning of teaching ground tying and just good communication skills. We use our hands a lot to point and to draw them to us and to ask them to halt. So a lot of body language is used. And, you know, at the same time, we're building these skills, which are really skills that every horse and handler should have, moving the forehand, moving the haunches, backing up with everything just a light touch, eventually hopefully just a point. So this first level competition would also involve weaving cones. It'll involve walk, trot, back, stand, jump over a little jump, maybe walk through a narrow gap is a common one where we'll put like a jump standard in a pole and we'll hang a tarp on it. And the other side will be the wall. And we'll ask the horse to enter that gap and stand there and then wait and then join us on the other side of it. And I think one of the brilliant things about it, and the reason it has such a positive effect on horses in other areas, is because in horse agility, we're asking horses to go on things, over things, under things, and through things. We have curtain that we may have pool noodles or a shower curtain or a tarp. So all of these things are just really supporting what we might ask the horse to do in everyday life.
That's what I was hearing the entire time you were talking. I was hearing, well, everyone needs to do this because how often do we work with our horses on the ground more than we work with them up top? A lot. Mm-hmm. We're on the ground with them all the time, you know, even when we feed them, clean their stalls and move them, you know, go ahead and take them out and groom them. I mean, all those things, we're probably on the ground with our horse 80%, and 20% we actually get a chance to get on. So these are just some fabulous foundation skills, you know, it's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I will say the first year I got involved with this, I held monthly horse agility, we call them play days, at my place. And now I hold, I think I've got three scheduled this year. And we typically work on ground skills for the first maybe hour, probably about the first hour or so. And then we introduce a few obstacles and we take a break because it is a long time in the ring in hand. So you really, you make sure you're keeping an eye on the horses and the humans and make sure that you're not overdoing it. So we try to break it up. We often will take a couple of breaks in the morning, then have a lunch break, and then come back for a 10-obstacle competition after lunch. So everybody goes through one time, and there's a few obstacles they haven't practiced yet to throw in there. And I'll actually judge it, and we'll talk about the scoring, and, you know, they get ribbons and so on and so forth. But the people that did that first year, I heard from each one of them about how much better their horses were under saddle. As they took them to, you know, we had trail riders, we had endurance riders, dressage riders, cross-country riders, and pleasure trail riders. And, boy, it makes sense to us, and we know that, but it's just really good to hear it. Some people would much rather be in the saddle than on the ground.
So if somebody doesn't live in Vermont near you and they want to compete in horse agility or find out a clinic or find out maybe an instructor near them to get more involved, what are their options?
Yeah, that's a little bit hard in our country. We're getting there. I believe that I'm one of 11 accredited trainers in all of North America. Because it was developed in England, there's a lot more opportunities over in Europe. If you go on the Horse Agility website, and it's thehorseagilityclub.com, if you go on that website and do worldwide events, it'll give you a listing, but you'll see the competitions are in the Netherlands and England. So what Vanessa has come up with, which I think is brilliant, is she's come up with online, it's called OLA, O-H-L-A, O-L-H-A, Online Horse Agility. And people can join the club, which is not you know, expensive to do so. I think $7 is like £30, I think, a year. So it's like $47 a year. And you get two free entries with that. So every month you can go on the website and download a new agility course. So it also gives instructors and just horse enthusiasts brand new fresh ideas every single month on what obstacles you could put out there, how to navigate them, how to change it up. So you print it off, you set it up in your yard and practice it, and then have someone film it. And they can do it just on a smartphone or through a video camera, send it into the club, and it gets judged every month. You actually get an email with feedback on how you scored in horsemanship and in effectiveness on every obstacle. You get critiques, and you even get a ribbon. from the competing within your country and within the world, and those stats come up on the website. So that's a fun way to get into competition, and we did that the first year, first couple of years we did that. We tried to be pretty consistent with it, and then last year I think I only did it twice, just travel got in the way, and I didn't do it regularly like I had before, but that's a really good motivator for people, and again, giving them fresh ideas and keeping that horse really engaged with a lot of interest. In terms of, you know, training, learning about it, I travel around New England and do it on my website, which is just HeidiPotter.com. There are some, I think there's a couple of horse agilities, maybe one up in Maine. There is a trainer in terms of kind of West Coast. I believe there's one in Oregon. So there's a list. You can go on the website and check U.S. instructors. There aren't a lot of us. So it's just still so new. I have no doubt it will continue to grow, and as we take on more accredited trainers, hopefully opportunities will be able to get people out.
Well, I know a couple of years ago, Heidi, we had you in Buffalo, New York at our international conference, and you did a talk on horse agility and set up some obstacles and had people go out, and because of what we do with the horses are not known by the people that are handling them, because we often provide those horses with a university or college involved or a host site. So they got to instantly learn the horse and navigate it through obstacles. And I think people really loved that session. That was a fun session you did for us.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I really enjoyed it too. And what worked out brilliantly, Christy, is I think we had three horses out there for that one. And they were so different. And that's what's really neat. And people handling the horse learn, but everybody watching, everyone's going to have these type of horses. You have kind of that bold, brave horse. And then you have the terrified horse, and then you have the horse cautious, but if you give them time and a little patience, they'll be able to do just about anything you ask. So it's, to me, helping people read their horse and learn how to support them is really, really great. I spend a lot of time talking about letting the horse relax, waiting for them to lick and chew, to process information versus pushing them. I will tell you, it's probably been a couple years now since I've Googled it, but I Googled horse agility, and there were things that came up. There's other people doing things called horse agility. I looked at some of the competitions that came up on YouTube for horse agility, and it was not at all the type of horsemanship that we're promoting through this club. And I think it's in awe. What I was viewing is a timed in-hand event with obstacles, but there was a lot of pressure being put on the horses. They were using sticks and ropes and push, 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 and horses were terrified. And yes, you know, a lot of times they would blast through an obstacle because they were, you know, being told to, but that's not the type of experience that we're looking for through the International Horse Agility Club. So I think, you know, it's really good for people to really look at it from a horse's perspective, because that's what we're doing and saying, okay, is this horse having
fun?
And
I appreciate you bringing that up. I appreciate that very much, because there is a big difference, you know, in different kinds of styles. And just Googling or just going on YouTube doesn't always do what's really going on. So how then, Heidi, do people find, once more, the website for Horse Agility and then also your website? Because we're about at the end of our 20 minutes, and I would love for people to be able to know exactly what to do for both of those.
Okay, thank you. Their website for the Horse Agility Club is thehorseagilityclub.com. The agility book, the handbook. I have them on my website as well, if you don't want to have one in England. those are great books. They're very helpful. Vanessa did a very good job kind of talking about basic skill building, relationship, how you go from an halter to Liberty Horse. She also has a DVD that's come out that's very good. That's also available. And I think that's the best way to get information on it. There is a lot of information on the club website. There's blogs. There's videos. So as long as it's affiliated with this club in England, the International Horse Agility Club, IHAC, then you're looking at the right stuff, and I think people will really be impressed with what they do.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much for being on the show today. This is such a fun new sport and such a fun thing to do with your horse, and I love the technology of, you know, if you don't have somebody near you right now, you can go ahead and get online and kind of do it remotely. I think that's a great idea. So thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Christy. Thanks for letting me visit with you today.
And that's HeidiPotter.com is where you'll find the website. Thanks, Heidi, and we'll talk to you again soon. Also, Heidi has a clinic on there that she's doing at Bitterroot Ranch in Dubois, Wyoming, July 26th through August 2nd. I think she still has some spots. It's a centered riding natural horsemanship clinic and what looks like a very beautiful location. So you can find all of that at HeidiPotter.com. I think Jennifer's already downloading information. So she's always wanted to do this kind of stuff, and especially the horse agility. And now, I don't know if her horse wants to do it, but we'll find that out soon enough.
Absolutely. But I just think, you know how we had the vaulting show a while back and how vaulting is such a good basic to learn how to ride from your seat and your legs? Well, I think this horse agility is such a good way to learn how to have a solid foundation and relationship with your horse on the ground. It just seems like a natural place to start, wherever you are in your horsemanship, whether you're brand new at it or whether you've been doing it for years. It sounds like it will help everyone have a better relationship with their horses and have some fun doing it. I think it's great.
I don't see my naughty Hackney pony doing it, because I think he'd just want to knock everything over, run into everything, and see how big a mess he could make.
He'll still be having fun, Glenn.
He certainly won't be winning any competitions unless the biggest mess is part of the competition. That would be the fun he was having. Well, let's take a break for our song. We have Marianne Kennedy today with Heart in Your Hands, and we're going to be back and we're going to talk. It's so funny that Heidi brought up talking about the martial arts and how she does that also to be a better rider. Well, that's what we're going to be talking about here in a few minutes with James Shaw. We'll be right back.
riding my horse one day, I had a flash and I heard him say, it's more than leather that you hold when you take the reins, you know. It isn't some kind of magic between animal and man, more than words or whispers, it's a desire to understand, and you can do it too if you put your heart in your head. Walking my dog one day, in a busy mind I was miles away. Those eyes were looking straight at me, waiting for some love to run through that leash. It isn't some kind of magic between animal and man.
That was Marianne Kennedy, Heart in Your Hands. You can find all her music at MarianneKennedy.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Christy from the Certified Horsemanship Association, and Jennifer is in the producer chair this morning. We are here Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern every day of the week, and we're glad that you decided to join us. Christy is here on the third Tuesday of every month talking about training and certified horsemanship stuff. And Christy, we do appreciate you being here. Now, you have been making your rounds around the other shows on the network, and you'll be featured as a guest coming up on the Horsemanship Radio Show with Debbie Laux, I think in the next episode, which comes out the end of the month.
Yes, very excited about that. Pleasure. I know you all have known Debbie for a long time, but I've just recently met her, and so thrilled to be able to be on that show. And it's fun to be in the other chair for a little bit, you know. Now that I'm used to the host chair, I'm like, wow, I get to be a guest. People care about what I have to say, too. This is fun.
Yeah, that show's good, and it's becoming very popular. Of course, Debbie Laux is Monty Roberts' daughter, and she is a true horseman in her own right. You know, she likes to talk a lot about Monty, but she's a terrific rider and as well. And I didn't know till this week that her husband is a professional tennis player. So I have to talk to her about. I never knew that. Of all the, I guess I just never asked her what he did. So I guess I got to be more observant next time. Well, our next guest is ready.
Wonderful. Well, it is my pleasure to introduce James Shaw. I met James
quite a while back. We were at one of these horse expos around the country, and I remember watching what he did and saying, wow, our instructors would love to have him come to one of our international conferences. I want to learn more. This is great. So we invited him to come to one of our international conferences, and sure enough, our instructors loved his method, loved what he brings to both horse and rider. He has, for the last 20 years, he's been doing a ride from within, which is his own targeted type of riding. And what he's done is he's created all of his background in Tai Chi and Bakwa and Eastern Healing Arts, and he's combined it all together so that we as riders question and change our old beliefs about our balance and our movement and our strength and what it involves when we're up on top of our horses. So, James, it is a pleasure to have you today. Welcome.
Hi, Christy. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So James right now is still in Colorado because we hung out together this past weekend at the Colorado Horse Council's Rocky Mountain Horse Expo, and we had a great time, and it was so much fun to see, James, all of the people that were attending all of your sessions.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It's so great to be able to share what I do one-on-one and actually teach and then have the time afterwards just to hang out. And as my teacher would say, trade minds with people so that, you know, I get to explain in more detail, you know, the nuances of the art. And I get to hear how it affects them in ways that I would have never known. I had people come up to me. One lady was a fair hair, and she walked up with a big smile on her face like she knew me. And I'm in my mind, I'm going, uh-oh, she knows me. I don't recognize her. And she said, you healed my back 2 years ago. Now, immediately I went, no, you healed her. She healed her back 2 years ago using, you know, some principle and some technique that I showed her for movement. But that's so beautiful about the expos that, you know, she's not going to, I wouldn't have known otherwise. So it's just beautiful. And, you know, that's what this is all about, is creating longevity in the horse and the rider. Because too often we have a really incredible short riding career because we end up going against basically forces greater than ourselves, gravity, the horse, and we both wear out. You know, the horse wears out in the lower lumbar and usually the joints going back down to the hocks, and riders wear out in the hips and knees or the hips and back. So, you know, these techniques, these internal arts, well, it's really Tai Chi and its sister arts, Bakwa and Xingyi. But they teach us that basically, you know, they are martial art and they are healing art at the same time. And in being that, they teach us how to use our body that will be better when we're 70 than when we were 60. You know, it's not about being bigger, faster, and stronger. So that's... Yeah, the Horse Expo is just the perfect place to, you know, to get to introduce these things to people and meet some old friends.
Absolutely, guys.
Talk on the radio.
And to share, that's right. Well, and it's so good to have you on today. And so I would like to know, for those people that are listening, James, how do they, and myself again, because I need a refresher course all the time, how do we apply it to our riding? What are some exercises and some different things that you can give us? Where do we start?
Well, probably the first thing that you can do, even if you're just listening to this show today and you go out in the backyard or to the school or the arena and try, is if the riders become aware of their breath, meaning that they bring what's unconscious, our respiration, and bring that up into the conscious mind just by focusing on your breath. For instance, that you're inhaling through your nose, like smelling a flower, exhaling through your mouth, like playing a flute. Our breath is the quickest way that a horse knows that we're in control of our body, meaning they are so amazing at sensing us. You know, I always say their awareness is 100 times what ours is, even at our best, they're 100 times more aware than we are. So controlling your respiration rate tells the horse you're calm, you know, and it's so easy to do and it's so easy to forget, you know, because the breath is meant to be an unconscious function in the body, thank goodness. To change it, we have to bring it up into the conscious mind. So just the fact that you're breathing in and trying to breathe out a little bit longer than the inhale so that you don't hold your breath, horses immediately respond to that. And not only do they then, I believe, see that we're calm, we're not nervous, anxious, angry, frustrated, have fear, these things that we can bring from our daily life to the barn, through your breath, calming your breath, they connect to that, and their breath actually changes. And so from a, let's say, an emotional point of view, they calm down as they match our breath. And from a physical aspect, when we breathe calmly and slowly, usually our breath drops into our abdomen, like when we were born, how babies breathe. And that in the human being not only increases our lung capacity, but it actually lowers our center of gravity, which drops our balance, if you will, closer to the ground. When we're even next to the horse, let alone sitting on them, and we lower our breath, their breath moves back into their visceral gut, meaning their diaphragm pushes against their internal organs, and it looks like they're breathing into their belly. And that actually moves their center of gravity back into and towards their haunches, which every discipline of riding that I know, that's a goal, to get the horse to move balanced from the hind end without the breath being back there, meaning that the visceral gut is relaxed. They don't do it very well. They can create the illusion of doing it. But so the breath is a fascinating tool that everybody can use today.
That makes so much sense. So I'll tell you, you're right. The motor is behind. I mean, that's where the motor of the horse is. They don't drag themselves around by their front end. Even though a lot of times when they're out in the pasture, they have more weight on the front end. When we ride them, we want them to push from behind for all the different things they're doing. So the fact that the breath can help not only the rider but the horse is huge. And, boy,
yes.
You know, we talk about four natural aids when we teach, right, our feet, legs, hands, and voice. But breath has to be a fifth natural aid. It does. It absolutely does. Because without breath, you have tightness and tension and locked joints and all kinds of issues.
Yes, yes, that's right. And as, you know, as the breath drops down, it's actually, when I say center, it's synonymous with rider seats. And then the primary source of sensitivity and direction and sense of rhythm or power coming up from the horse all happens in the seat. In fact, it happens through the sit bones. Because that's where that power, you know, when we talk about the power coming from or the drive coming from the hind end, that drive on a, like in a physics sense, comes from the horse pushing into the earth. And essentially, or to simplify it, the earth pushes back, and that force that's measurable travels through the horse's skeleton, just like it travels through our skeleton. So that force travels up each leg through the skeleton, is kind of, in my mind, gathered by the pelvis, directed into the spine through the sacrum, and travels forward. Now, when it travels forward, we can receive it through our sit bones. And if we receive it through our sit bones, meaning that we're, you know, there's no opposition to that force coming up into our sit bones, and our breath is down into our belly and our back, it's changed the angle in the lumbar vertebrae. So that force comes out of the pelvis like it does in the horse and directly up our spine. And that changes how that force goes forward through the horse's back. So in essence, it creates up before forward in the horse, you know, to kind of use that riding term. And you know, in so many disciplines, we want the horse to be forward first, before we go up. But this, because the angle of the bones change when we breathe like this, it comes up first. And then we have this sense of connection and a really heightened ability to control the direction of that force in our skeleton before it ever gets to our limbs. So it's a fascinating crossover in between Tai Chi, true Tai Chi principles and riding application. So it's not,
well, James,
it's not just,
you were,
yes.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, no. You were so much fun the other day when you were teaching that I just have to bring this up because, you know, on Glenn's and Jen's show, it's all about fun. He told me a long time ago, he goes, yeah, safe and effective, but I want some fun. And you said something the other day in the arena that had me laughing. You said, and it ties in directly to seat bones. Oh, I'm going to say it, James. You know I am. He says, Glenn, he goes, we have bossy butts. Our butts are very bossy, and they dictate. So will you please talk to us more about our bossy butts and how we can make them not be so bossy?
Yeah. Well,
I got a question first that kind of relates to that. Does the size of the butt indicate the bossiness level, James, or not?
Not if you ask me. yeah,
okay,
I know a tiger pit when I walk up to it. No, what I mean is,
I didn't know if Kardashian level, you know, meant extremely bossy, and then we went to the other direction. I didn't know.
Oh, good. Yes, indeed. Okay, so the bossy butt. What I was really, and I do, I like to have fun with this because, well, for me, this is what I do. You know, this is my life. It's not my job, and I was a qualified electrician, and that wasn't really fun, you know, and I did it for a paycheck, so I get you guys, it's got to be fun. Otherwise, it just becomes work, and then we're trudging. So the bossy butt, what I was talking about is that when we, in internal arts, which Tai Chi is one of them, and equally in these healing arts, when we're balanced, meaning that we move correctly from our center, which our center is really defined by our femur bones, our thigh bones, our pelvis, and our lower lumbar, because these three bone structures work together, right? They're not designed to work independently. So when we move from there, we're balanced. If we don't move from there, we're quite capable to move. You know, from our arms and legs. And then in our world, we consider that keeping our balance. And when we keep our balance, the bigger muscle groups do the work. The gluteus, the bossy butt, your upper body, your chest, your quads, your legs. So when we are in the saddle, and especially when we haven't truly joined with the power of the horse, so in essence, we're on top of that power trying to redirect it through leverage, if you will, you know, through pushing with the leg or pulling with the hand or leaning a little bit in the body. Those bigger muscles they do it completely unconscious. So that's why I say they become bossy, because if you're not careful, they're acting on your behalf and they don't ask you. So your legs could be tight. That's why riders are tremendous at holding their breath. You know, other than like divers, you know, those like, say, pearl divers that have to hold their breath and go down 30 feet. Those are the only people in the world that are better than riders at holding their breath. But they hold their breath because the abdominal muscles squeeze in to hold the spine still. So we end up holding our breath. So, yeah, we've got a bunch of bossy muscles that don't listen to us. Well, they listen, but they don't ask. You know, they're like the fascia. The fascia is the king of all the bossy elements in our body. So, yeah, that's what I meant. We start trying to push the horse forward with our, you know, with our larger muscles. Because most of us, that's how we learn to move on the ground. To animate ourselves is with the bigger muscles. So we just take what we know best on the ground, and unconsciously it comes into the saddle. So, for instance, the very blocks that in our bodies, in the rider's bodies, And those blocks are synonymous with keeping your balance. Right? So we all have them until we learn how to undo them. So those blocks impede the forward movement of the horse. And we don't recognize that it's, oh, my muscle strength is impeding the horse, so I start pushing more with my bossy butt. And usually it doesn't. It either ends up being a really tiring ride, or the horse and the rider aren't full of bliss when they are done, because it's frustrating. And each one of them is probably thinking, if they just let go, I'd move. If he just move, I'd let go. You know, so, yeah, it becomes, and again, we, you know, it's got to be fun. Or we want
Absolutely.
It to be fun, or it's too serious.
Well, and the other thing that I loved is, you know, some specific exercises for the listeners today. Like, you did a great thing with those two ladies in that one arena where I was watching you, where you had them take their feet out of the stirrups, and you talked to them about their sit bones again and in relation to what size fruit they might be feeling at that particular walk they were doing with the circles that their seat bones were making. So could you give us some specific exercises like that for our listeners that would help them?
Yes, absolutely. And I'll, in these exercises, like asking the riders, the example that you used to feel their sit bones and describe them as fruit, really why I ask that specific question to some people seems just silly, you know. My seat bones aren't fruit. I know what shape they are and how big they really are, and they don't really, you know, feel like apricots. But what that does is it, when you visualize something, it uses the creative mind, and in Tai Chi they would call the Yi mind or the spirit mind. In that part of the brain is where feeling creativity or feeling sensitivity actually electrically come from. So when we use a visualization, for instance, with your breath, I will quite often say, breathe in like smelling a flower, exhale like playing a flute. And when you breathe in, if you can visualize the coming into your lungs or coming into your body through your nose as blue, so you breathe in blue, and when that air hits the deepest part of your body, regardless of whether that's your throat or your chest or your belly or your feet, when it hits that deepest part, it turns from blue to red and leaves full of life. So I use those. That's a great one, is to breathe in blue through the nose like smelling a flower, out red like playing a flute. And the colors aren't really important. I choose blue and red because that's what the blood does. Comes back to the heart. Blue, depleted of oxygen, and it leaves oxygenated and full of life back to the rest of the body. But if your favorite colors are turquoise and pink, fantastic, or whatever it may be. But so that visualization actually, coupled with the breathing, right, not just thinking about it, but using, bringing that unconscious respiration to the conscious mind where we can control it, that's a great help. The other thing that is truly helpful is to, once, for instance, the sit bone, when you're in the saddle, at the walk, in a round pen, on a lunge line, on the trail, anywhere, becoming aware of the weight of your body in your sit bones, that bone-to-leather connection, and again, not getting too serious about it, like, oh my God, I can't feel one, but actually trying to think, ooh, what kind of fruit do they feel like? And you can do this. You can either take your feet out of the stirrups if it's safe, or if you feel the sit bone contact, when you push down, and remember the sit bone contact is where you are physically connected to the horse. And when I say physically, I mean that's the only place that you receive that power, because that big bossy butt does not receive force. The gluteus maximus muscle, quad muscles, your inner thigh muscles, they don't receive force, right? So we can't receive power through muscle. Only bone receives power. So as you're breathing down and visualizing your sit bones as fruit, we want them to be as big and heavy as they can possibly be. And I know in many schools of riding, saying, I want you to be heavy in your sit bones, is counterintuitive, you know, because we want to be light on our horse's back, but we are never lighter than we are. You know, you can't think I'm a feather and have the horse feel you any differently, but through your sit bones, they can control you. So it's a really cool thing to do is just slightly push down on the stirrup or let that bossy butt ask it to tighten up a little bit and see how the sit bone connection disappears, meaning that your big, oh God, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, your big grapefruit-sized sit bone all of a sudden turns to a P, and that's a way to see how unconsciously and almost regularly we disconnect from the horse by making the sit bone smaller through muscle contraction.
Such a good point, because we perch. We perch so much when we ride, and when you perch is when you get into that fetal position, and then you get into trouble. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. And James, go ahead, please, because we're almost out of time. We have about a minute. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to say that the reason I ever do that I'm here, because I'm, you know, I ride, but that's not how I came into this thing. If we do not feel safe, meaning not just emotionally and in our mind, but if our body doesn't feel safe, and that safety comes from being connected to the power and not having the separation, then those big muscles are going to contract to hold our balance. So this idea of the breath and the sit bones, it creates a state of relaxed, controlled movement because we feel safe when we're connected. I just wanted to put that out there, that you should, as a result of this breath, feel safer and more connected, not only to yourself, but then to the horse too. Thank you for giving
absolutely
the time to put that
no
in.
No, I appreciate it, James. And also, your website is ridefromwithin.com. Is that how people find out more about you? Is that the best way?
That is. Ridefromwithin.com. They can call me on my phone if they'd like to. They can. My phone number is on the website. But that's the best way. Drop me an email at either james@ridefromwithin.com or info@ridefromwithin.com. And the one thing that I pride myself on is I'm a teacher, and I want to spread this art to people because I love people. I like horses. I love people. And that means I have to be available. So, yeah, there's a ton of information on the website. There are 6 free audio lessons that you can download. That 3 of them talk specifically of the breath, and 3 of them talk specifically of the sit bones. So it's a great source of free information. You can buy my book there too if you like.
Thank you, James, so much for being on the show today. We so appreciate it.
You're welcome, Chrissy. It was too short and too much fun.
So all right, we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, there you go. And he kept it. He didn't even get in any trouble there. I set him up, but he was too smart to take it. So
he was so good about the tiger's den.
Yes.
He knew where you were going. He knew.
I set him up. He could have taken it and gotten in trouble, but he didn't. See, I guess I'm the only one getting in trouble here today. Well, Chrissy, once again, it seems like it went by very quickly this morning. Thank you so much for joining us again. We really appreciate it, and we'll be back again next month here. Chrissy, if you missed her past episodes, you can go to horsesinthemorning.com and just search for Certified Horsemanship Association. It'll bring up all the past episodes that we've done now. There's been a number of them, so if you missed those past ones and want to go back and take a listen, that's probably the easiest way to do it. And Certified Horsemanship Association also has a page on their website, right?
We do. And I'll tell you, for those that are listening, this is the hot time right now for our clinics. For anybody out there that wants to audit and see a day of how to become a certified instructor or to actually come to a clinic. In April alone, it looks like, I'm looking at our list now, we have 12, and they're all over the country and in Canada, and they range from our English Western ones to our trail guide, where you pack out in the wilderness. We even have a barn manager certification going on in Wyoming. And so please get on our page and check it out and just come and see what you think.
Very good. What's the website again?
CHAinstructors,
www.cha.com.
Very good. And, of course, the easiest way to listen to our shows is through our app. You can get it. It's free and it's easy to use. Just go to the iOS or Android app store and search for Horse Radio Network. All 8 shows here on the network, including the Horsemanship Radio Show and Horses in the Morning, one we talked about earlier here, hosted by Debbie Laux, is on there. And you'll find all the different shows that we do on there, and it's so simple and so easy to listen. If you're out cleaning the barn or you're riding or you're in your car, that is when most people listen to our shows, and about 60% of them are doing it through the app now in about 50 different countries. So we appreciate you listening on the app. If you don't have it yet, check it out. That's it for this month. Christy will be back again next month. We'll be back here with Jamie tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. See you, Christy.
Bye.
Wear your helmets. Be safe.